don't be shy or afraid to try new things. A big company might look intimidating from the outside, but like I told you, they have problems. And if you know you have a product or a service that can help them be better at what they do, help them save money, help them create more value, help them make money, a big company wants to listen to you. And guess what? Most of the suppliers that work for big companies started as small businesses. All you really need is to be bold and take that chance. Don't just write yourself off and say, I'm too small to work for a big company. And you know, don't be intimidated. You have to go with your guts. You have to challenge your comfort zone. Your comfort zone might be that you're selling to individual consumers right now and you're wondering why your business is not growing. The moment you land one big company as a customer, it might change everything for your business. The kind of money they pay is different. The way they do business is different. And when you do a big company, you might never want to go back to, you know, depending on what you sell, you might never want to go back to selling to individual consumers. So let that be a challenge that you put on for yourself, that in the next 6 months, in the next 1 year, I'm going to target a big company and see if I can successfully do business with them.
Every big thing starts small. It's a natural law. Every big multinational corporation was once a small business. Welcome to the Small Starter Business Podcast, a unique podcast for practical tips and advice to help you start, grow, or turn around your business.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. I am your host, John Paul Iwoha. Today's episode is interesting and different because I'm going to be talking about a different kind of sales that many small businesses or even individual and independent entrepreneurs are used to. And today's episode is about the art of B2B sales. I'm going to be talking about how to sell and do business with big companies and organizations. So this is going to be really interesting. And it's interesting for a couple of reasons. One reason why this episode should really, you know, catch your attention and fancy is that when you really look at it, when you're in business and your goal is to grow your business and make money, and you can only make money from customers, right? There are really, when you really think of it, there are just about four different kinds of customers that exist in the world, right? Most people, when they start their business, are focused on consumers. These are individuals. They can be men, women, children, whoever, but individuals and households, which are, you know, generally called the consumer group. That's what many businesses focus on, right? And that's called the B2C space. So it's business to consumer. That's why it's called B2C. And in such businesses, most of your consumers are individuals or households. The second type of customer that exists is the SMEs. Now, these are small, these are micro, small and medium-sized businesses. Across the world, especially in emerging markets, SMEs make up over 90% of businesses that exist because most businesses are actually small businesses. Small businesses are the largest chunk of businesses that exist. So there are businesses that sell to small and mid-sized businesses. And you would have noticed many banks these days have created a category for SMEs. So you look at a couple of your commercial banks, even some of the fintechs that have come up, they are specifically targeting small and mid-sized businesses as an important customer category, right? Now, the third type of customer that exists are big companies. Now, when I say big companies, I'm going to explain to you, I'm going to define what I mean by big companies. But essentially, it's very likely you know what a big company is. An example would be Toyota, Dangote. There are actually many big companies you've never heard of because of the kind of business that they do. They really don't need to advertise on Facebook or advertise on social media or come on TV. So big companies are out there. They employ a lot of people. They make a lot of money. And those are the kinds of companies I'm going to be talking about today because they can be fantastic customers. And there are businesses that have built a fortune just serving big companies. Imagine if you are a supplier to Coca-Cola. Imagine if you are a supplier to ExxonMobil. Imagine, you know, so all these businesses, all these big companies you hear that make a lot of money, they sustain businesses that support them as contractors, suppliers, service providers. As you can imagine, later on in this episode, I'm going to be explaining a couple more reasons why, you know, it can be very interesting and lucrative to have a big company as your customer. In fact, there are businesses that only have one big company as a customer. They only have one customer. That's all. And that's because they can't do more business with any other person because all their revenues, all their sales, all their time goes to serving that one big customer. And you'll be shocked at the amount of money these kinds of businesses make just by serving one customer that is a big company, right? And then the fourth type of customer that exists is the government. So there's a segment of customers known as the B2G. So B2G means that you're in business and you're serving government, business to government. And as you can imagine, government can be a major customer. Government spends billions of dollars every year, depending on the country. So there are companies that are sustained solely by the government. Their only customer is the government. Maybe they are involved in government projects, contracts. They are involved with supplying the military, so they do military contracts. Some of them supply the civil service. There are all sorts of opportunities in government that people serve. But I can imagine that by the definition of this episode, government qualifies as a big organization. You know, because I remember in this episode I said I'm going to be talking about how to sell and do business with big companies and organizations. So given that definition, governments qualify, you know, to be a big organization. But I'm not going to be talking about governments in this episode. I'm only going to focus on big companies, big private for-profit companies, and also big organizations that are not for-profit, but they are non-governmental. So when I say a big organization or a big company, what do I mean? So to clearly define, you know, the boundaries of the conversation in this podcast episode, a big company is a company that has more than 200 employees and makes more than $50 million in revenues, in sales. So that's how I would define a big company. A big company is distinct from a medium-sized company or a mid-sized company. It's different from a small company. It's also different from a micro business. It's also different from an independent entrepreneur, a freelancer or something like that. So for the sake of this conversation, I'm talking about companies that make more than $50 million in annual revenues and employ more than 200 people. So those are the kinds of organizations I want to talk about. And within this category, businesses that make more than $50 million or employ more than 200 people are actually less than 10% of the total number of businesses that exist. Remember, like I mentioned earlier, most of the businesses in the world are actually small businesses, right? But the interesting thing about big companies is they are a small proportion. They make up less than 10% of the total number of businesses, but they can contribute up to 50% of the economy of a country. That's how powerful these big companies are. You would have heard of the FTSE 100, which are like the top 100 companies in the UK. You may have heard of the Fortune 100 companies, Fortune 50. These are the top largest companies in the US, you know, for example. So those are the kinds of companies I want to talk about. And when it comes to B2B, B2B explicitly is about selling to big companies, right? And the interesting thing is that there are thousands of businesses that make money just from serving big companies. And the reason why I decided to separate, you know, talking about government opportunities to serve government needs, make money from government contracts and stuff like that is, I know there's a lot of money to be made in government, but I wanted to talk about big companies first because these organizations are mainly, because they are for profit, their focus is on profit. Unlike governments that can afford to play politics or be wasteful or give contracts to incompetent people, right? A big company doesn't have that luxury. The owner of the company may like your face, may be from the same tribe as you are, but if you cannot deliver the goods, if you cannot deliver value, you are bad news to that company, because every private for profit company is out to make money. They are for profit. So they need people that can add value to their business. And I like that. So I think it is something that provides a fair and level playing field for anybody who has value in their business and is looking to penetrate the B2B space. You want to start serving big companies. So I'm really going to open your eyes to some very important considerations you need to pay attention to. And another reason why big companies are quite important, even though I'm going to talk about the upsides and the downsides of getting into the B2B space and targeting big companies as your customers, is that many big companies make, like I already told you, they make north of $50 million. And if you look at their financial statements, for example, when you take out payroll, so payroll is the amount of money they spend on their employees, you know, the people who work for these big companies, a huge chunk of money that runs through big companies goes to paying their suppliers and, you know, outside suppliers and people that do business with these companies. So there's a lot of money to be made if you understand how to serve big companies. You know, if you can make them your customer and keep them as your customers. And, you know, for every big company that is, you're big, you're successful, those big companies have customers. They sell products or they sell services and they take their business very seriously. So they are going to depend on suppliers and business partners for raw materials to make their products, office supplies to keep their business running, the office running. They will need professional services. If they use computers, they will need tech support. They have employees, so they'll have needs around training and improving their workforce. They are going to need to outsource certain things. So big companies need a lot of help, and they're always looking for better, more efficient, faster ways of solving their problems. Because the bigger a business gets, the more complex it becomes, and the bigger the problems that it has. So big companies are a gold mine for entrepreneurs and businesses that know how to serve their needs. So the next thing I want to talk about is the upsides, right? So I've just given you like a broad introduction or background, you know, about the B2B space, about business to business, trying to serve big companies. But let's look at the upsides. Why should you be interested in serving companies, big companies, as your clients or your customers? One big upside is that big companies and big organizations can pay more. They have more money, so they can pay more. And they are less price sensitive compared to if you're trying to sell your product or your service to individual consumers, right? Big companies have more money, they can pay more. So that's an upside. And like I told you, there are companies that only have one customer. And that is only possible because that one customer is a big company. So they don't need to serve different customers or individual consumers. They are totally satisfied, or they are totally busy with that one customer. Imagine if you were making parts for Toyota. Or imagine if you were serving supplying Coca-Cola for something, right? The demand will be so huge that you may not have the space, the bandwidth, or the time to serve any other customer. So big companies have deep pockets, they are less price sensitive, and they can pay more. The second upside of big companies, of doing B2B, is that the sales orders and contract sizes are usually larger. So unlike an independent consumer that may buy one unit or one carton of your product, when a big company wants to buy, it's likely going to buy in the dozens or in the hundreds, because it's a much bigger organization. It has bigger needs. It has bigger problems. So when it wants to buy, it's likely going to buy more. So the typical size of the order will be large compared to if you were doing business selling to individual customers. Another upside of big companies, of B2B, is that they can be long-term customers, right? When a company is big, it doesn't really do well with changing environments. When you have a big company, they already have a formula that works for them. They are not very comfortable with rapid change. They like to keep things
stable and easy. So if you are able to penetrate a big company, it's very likely you are going to be with them for a long time, except you are unable to meet their needs anymore, or you become incompetent, or you become unreliable, or for some reason they cannot trust you. But for many people who work with big companies, you can find people who have been working for a big company for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. They've been doing business with the company. And that's because big companies like stability. If you can give them what they want, they are going to stick with you. So that's a very interesting opportunity that a big company comes with that you may not always find with consumers. When you're dealing with individual consumers can easily switch to another product, another service. Individual consumers are less likely to be loyal. You know, their loyalty is very fleeting. They can change their mind. They can cancel their subscription, you know, all sorts of things. But for a company, it takes time to break off from you. And that's because they like familiarity. They like the things that they know and they understand. They don't want to take a risk. They don't want to rock the boat, right? So that's another interesting thing. If you get a big company as a customer, it's likely going to be a long-term ride, a long-term relationship. Another upside of B2B is that you have the opportunity to grow with the customer. So when you're serving a big company, guess what? No matter how big a company is, they still want to grow. They want to grow into new cities. They want to enter new markets. They want to enter new countries. They want to launch new products. They want to attract new customers. And if you are with a big company and they are growing, guess what? You are likely going to grow with them because as you're serving their needs, their demand will increase. Their orders are going to increase and they will expect you to serve them more. So that's the opportunity that comes with serving a big organization. The more the hunger for growth is always there because they want to grow. They have competition. They have investors that they're accountable to, or they have a founder that is insatiable that wants to keep growing the company. No matter what they are doing, as that company is growing, you're going to be growing with them because their demands on your business will continue to grow. And as you are serving them, your business is also making more money. That's one interesting upside. You have the opportunity to grow with the customer. Another upside is that there's a certain degree of bragging rights that come with serving a big company. Because when you serve a big company, they have an established name in the market. They have an established brand and reputation. And just by doing business with a big company, you enhance your own profile. You enhance your own reputation. You can actually name drop. It becomes easier to do business because you can say, you know, so-and-so company is my client. And you know, when you say things like that, a big company is much more recognizable because of their size. It's very likely anybody you're talking to knows the company you're talking about. Why? Because it's a big company. So you can say, I've been working for that company. We've been doing business now for 3 years. You can go verify. So it enhances your own profile. You can put such things on your social media. You can put it on your websites. You know, you can ask them for a testimonial or a referral. Not really refer, a testimonial, which essentially says maybe the guy in the procurement department or the guy from their public communications or somebody in the company that can write something about your business on their letterhead to say, we've been doing business with this guy. He is dependable. He's trustworthy. He delivers on the goods. He's, you know, all sorts of things. Those things can open doors for you. Either with trying to raise money from investors, trying to get a loan from the bank, trying to expand your business, trying to hire more people, trying to get business partners on board. You can actually drop the name and say, this is the kind of customer that I serve. And people would instantly, because they recognize the company you're talking about, the perception they have of you would instantly be enhanced. So I've just talked about the upsides of doing business with a big company. I've just talked about the incentives for you to want to serve a big company, have them as a customer. But if you've been listening to my podcast, you should know that I like to always balance things because everything that has a good side has a bad side, or everything that's an opportunity has a risk. So now I'm going to talk about the risk or some of the danger signs of doing business with a big company. So the thing is, everybody is different. All I'm doing is I want to arm you with enough information so that you can size up the opportunity of getting or attracting big companies to be your customer. So I want to give you the pros and the cons. So I've talked about the pros. Let me talk about the cons. One downside of B2B, trying to get big companies as your customer, is that the access is often restricted. Access is often restricted, and penetrating big organizations can take a long time. You see, big companies are not like consumers that you can target on Facebook or social media or Instagram or chat people up on LinkedIn, right? Big companies are not they don't work the same way you would with individual consumers. Individual consumers are easy to reach. You can meet them in the streets. You can catch them on social media. You can catch their eyes in the market when they come to buy. You know where to catch consumers, individual consumers. But it's difficult to reach big companies because they are closed out. They are big organizations. And of course, you can't just get to the premises and then you just walk in. These are the kinds of places where you go to. They ask you if you have an appointment. Who do you want to see? You know, and if you don't know who you're going to see, definitely they're not going to let you in. So it's much more difficult to target the big organizations. And I'm going to give you some interesting tips about how you can overcome this obstacle. But it's one clear challenge that stands in your way. Even if you want to do business, even if you are interested in the opportunities I just talked about being able to sell more and all those things I talked about, it might actually be difficult for you to get into a big company. But like I said, I'm going to give you some interesting tips on how you can overcome this. Another downside is that you have to compete against other vendors. Because the interesting thing is, you're not just the only person who wants to serve a big company. Now, many people know that it can be easier to do business with a big company. There's much more money to be made, like I told you. So there's quite some competition. There are other people who want to be suppliers. There are other people who feel they can do a better job. And remember what I said, big companies are for profit. So efficiency is very important. They want to save money if it is possible. They want to get the best value because these guys are playing in markets where they have to be taken seriously, right? So that's an interesting opportunity you need to pay important attention to. So another downside of the B2B side is that it often requires detailed documentation. So big companies do business formally. They are not like your consumer that you can engage in the streets, in the markets, on your website, on social media, and you informally just, you know, start up a conversation and you start selling. It's very easy to sell to individual consumers because you don't need any, most times you don't need any formality. It's a very casual social activity, that type of selling. But when you're trying to sell to a big company, it's much more formal. You can't just talk like you talk on social media and be informal about it. There's usually some process. They will want a detailed documentation. They might want a proposal. They will want to be sure that they are doing business with a competent, credible company like yours. So they will want to see your company registration. Are you a registered business? Have you been paying your taxes? So they want to see some proof of tax payments, a tax clearance, you know, something like that. Are you financially buoyant enough to do business with a big company? So they might want to see your financial statements for the last 1 year or the last 3 year financial statements, because these guys have a reputation to protect. They're not just going to do business with anybody who may disappoint them or mess them up. So they are going to make sure that you qualify, and they will run you through a formal process to be sure that you check all the boxes. They might want to ask you for insurance. Maybe you're going to execute a project for us. What if something goes wrong? So we need an insurance cover. And many of these things are not things that the average business has. The average small business that is trying to grow. Many businesses don't think about these things because when you're doing business, when you're trying to sell to consumers, they don't ask you for all these things. But a big company is going to ask you for them. So that is one consideration you have to make. You have to make sure that when it comes to the documentation side, you are solid, because if you are wanting with your documentation, maybe you're not a registered business or there's something with tax or something, most big companies will not want to touch you because you are a reputational risk. And if they do business with you, they run the risk of reputational damage or loss, because if the regulator will come after them, or if anybody, some investigative journalist or whatever, is going to come after them, they have more to lose than you do, because you're just a small fry, right? So that's an important thing to keep in mind. Another interesting flag, red flag to look out for, if you're considering doing business with a big company, is that the payment structure is different. Now, what I mean is, when you are selling to an individual consumer, most times the consumer pays on the spot. If a consumer goes to a supermarket or comes to your office or goes to your website, they are likely going to pay before you give them the product or the service. It usually happens instantly, right? But with a big company, for most big companies, it's not that way. Most big companies will not pay you immediately. And that's because they have a department called a payables department. What a payables department does is, you will supply the big company the product or the service, and you have to wait 15 days or 30 days or 45 days. Some company pay up to 90 days, you know, before they pay you. So it's, you supply the big company, and then they are going to wait and process it. Of course, that's what they call it. Process it in air quotes, and then pay you after a couple of weeks or after a couple of days. So not every business has the cash flow stamina for that kind of thing. Some businesses actually live hand to mouth, right? Some businesses live hand to mouth. If they do not get their money immediately, they might not be able to pay rent. They might not be able to pay salaries and things like that. So not every business may have the cash flow or the cash reserves to endure a 30-day wait or a 60-day wait or a 90-day wait. So it's an important consideration you need to look at before you get into business with a big company. And then the downside I want to talk about is that a big company, they can be quite demanding customers, right? Remember what I told you, they have a reputation to keep. They are focused on efficiency. So you have to deliver. They are going to, you know, individual consumers can be forgiving, right? If you sell a product to them, some consumers may be dissatisfied, but they won't say anything. They'll just walk away. The worst they may do is maybe they may rant on social media, right? You can get away with it when it comes to consumers, but when it comes to a company, a big company, it's very likely you have a formal purchase order or a signed contract. They are going to follow up with you. They are going to be calling on you to make sure you deliver the value you promised. Do you know why? Because there are people who work in that big company that it's their job to actually follow up with their suppliers. It's that person's job. That person's promotion depends on how well they monitor the quality of work that's been done. So you have all these things like quality control, quality assurance, project manager, process manager, the unit manager. These are the people who are going to be calling up on you, because the success of their job depends on making sure that you do a good job. So you're not going to easily get away from it. They may call you at all times. They expect you to be at their beck and call. After all, they pay you well, you know? So it's a pro and con thing, and it's something you need to really consider. You can make more money when you serve a big company, but the responsibility is also higher. And it makes sense. To be fair to big companies, it makes sense. To whom much is given, much is expected. So if you want the big money, you want to wear the big drawers, you want to make the big bucks, you also have to be ready to level up and be able to carry that added responsibility that comes with doing business with a big company, because it's a totally different level. These are guys that are talking about process integrity. They're talking about corporate governance. They're talking about procurement management. They're talking about supply chain management. These guys don't kid. So except you're ready to move your business to the next level and level up with these guys, with more or less, you are now about to do business and chill with the big boys, right? You need to be able to level up in that sense. So I've just talked about the upsides and the downsides of B2B. And remember what I said B2B is, it's the kind of sales where you are specifically targeting companies, big companies, right? So B2B can be, you are targeting small businesses or big businesses, but for the sake of this episode, I'm actually talking about big companies, right? Because many small businesses still do, they do business informally. They will not ask you to present formal documentation and stuff like that. So that's why I'm not talking about small businesses. I'm talking about those big companies that are very formal in the way that they conduct sales with their contractors, with their suppliers, and all that. So at this point in the episode, I want to talk about five important tips. Five important tips that will really help you to succeed at B2B sales. If you're at a point in your business where you're thinking about targeting big companies, you want to step up in your business, you want to expand your sales, you want to be able to make more money, and you think you want to get into serving big organizations, there are five tips I'm going to share with you, and this is, these things are really going to help you. The first tip when you're doing B2B is that you need to know the key influencers and their needs. Because when you think about it, remember I said that a big organization has at least 200 employees. So there are 200 employees working in that company. And within those 200 or more people, there's somebody in there that has to make the decision to buy from your company, to buy from your business, right? So you need to know who the influencers are and who makes the decisions. So when it comes to influencers, there are actually two main kinds of influencers you need to look out for if you are going to successfully penetrate a big company. The first type of influencer is the user, right? So the user is the person or the unit that needs the product that you have or the service that you sell. So if, for example, if you are into IT, right, what unit inside of that company requires the services of your IT company, right? Is it the operations department? Is it the finance department? That is the user. The department is the user. The second influencer is the decision maker. And in many organizations, the person who needs your product is usually different from the person who has to make the decision and write the check, right? So sometimes it might be that some guy in a unit or a unit needs your product. They need your product, but they cannot approve your product. They cannot sign for it. They cannot pay you. They can't even contact you. And that's because they need the approval of the decision maker. Sometimes that decision maker might be the general manager. It might be the head of finance. It might be the owner of the company, you know? So you need to know who needs my product or my service, right? And then who is the decision maker? Who is going to decide? If you want to penetrate a big company successfully, you start from the person who has the need or the department who has the need. Why? Because most decision makers will not approve to buy anything except the company needs it. So you have to first make sure that there is a need in the company before you then seek the person who can approve it. So there are, like I just mentioned, there are two major influencers when it comes to B2B, as far as big companies are involved. You have the user and you have the decision maker. The second important tip I want to share is that you need to know the buying pattern and buying behavior of the big company you're about to target. Why? Because, you know, unlike small companies that can just wake up one morning and the founder decides, we're going to buy equipment, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, big companies actually run quite differently. They run on something called a budget. So before the year, say, for example, they are planning for next year. Before next year starts, at least by December, they have a budget of how much money they are going to spend next year, right? So if you want to do business with a big company, the best time to start making sure that there is room for you is this year. Because, you know, the way it works is if your item is not in the budget, most big companies will tell you, come back next year. Why? And when you ask them why, they'll say, it's not in the budget. We don't have space in our budget. Why? They've already planned for it. So the behavior of a big company is quite different from the behavior of a small company because of this budgeting cycle. So you need to understand their budgeting cycle so you can position yourself just in time and so that they can accommodate you in advance of the next cycle, right? So that's important because the budgeting cycle influences when big companies buy. If they don't have a budget for something, they usually don't spend for it. And, you know, you also need to be sure of how much they have in their budget, you know, for the department you want to target. Why? It needs to accommodate you. You also need to know what the terms are. So it's not just enough to know, okay, they can spend. What are their terms? Are they going to pay you upfront? Some companies pay upfront. They might pay you 20%, 30%, 50%. Some companies even pay you 100% upfront. But guess what? That same company or another company may tell you, we don't pay anything. Supply, and then we'll pay you after 30 days, after 60 days, after 90 days. You need to be sure what the terms are so that you're not taken by surprise. It's not enough to see that the contract is worth $100,000 or $50,000 or $200,000, right? You also need to be sure that the terms are okay, are favorable to you. Because it doesn't make sense if it's a $200,000 contract and they are saying that they are not going to pay you anything up front, that you have to do the job and then they will pay you after you complete the job. Guess what? All of a sudden, a $200,000 opportunity then means that you have to go and look for money to execute the job, to execute the project. And then when the project is done, that's when the company will pay you. So it's still the same opportunity, $250,000. But because of the terms, all of a sudden it's not feasible for you. And if you do not understand the terms and you get into such a thing, you might easily land yourself in trouble. Because big companies can stick to the terms of the contract. They can say, this is what you signed. They usually have a legal department or they have solid law firms working for you. You can't match them. So you need to be careful what you sign up for. Very important. The third tip I want to talk about is that you need to focus on solution-based sales rather than selling standard products or services. Now, you need to pay close attention to this because this is very important. When a big company is buying something, rather than listen to what they want to buy, you also need to listen for what they are not saying, which is why are they buying? Why are they buying and what are they trying to achieve? This question is very important because sometimes a big company doesn't really understand the problem that they have, you know? And many times if you're doing business with a big company, for example, if you are a specialist in what you do, the big company may actually be a generalist. So you know more than the big company, right? So when they are making a request, it's likely that they think what they want to buy is a solution to their problem. But because you know more, because you're a specialist in that product or that service, you need to be thinking in terms of why do they want to buy this thing and what are they trying to achieve? And these are questions that you can ask when you are invited to make a proposal or make a presentation, or if there is some opportunity for you to have a conversation with the person in responsible for procurement or supply chain, try and find out why are you guys buying this and what are you trying to achieve? Now, the reason is solution-based selling when it comes to big companies is what unlocks opportunity and money for you, right? Because I've seen it happen several times. Sometimes a company wants to buy cars. They want to buy, you know, cars. And then you ask, why do you want to buy these cars? And then they say, we just want to have company cars so that our marketers can take them, you know, can take them around and stuff like that. And then because you are into cars, because that's your business, you know that this is an unnecessary risk for the big company, because by the time they buy these cars, they have to be responsible for maintenance. They have to deal with drivers and all those things. And those are distractions for the company. So because you understand why they are buying it, you can actually propose an arrangement where they outsource the service and make it a leasing service instead. You provide the cars. You make sure that you provide the drivers. You're responsible for maintenance and repairs. And at the end of the month, you build the company. Guess what? This arrangement will make you far more money. But to the company, it is an amazing deal because they don't need to deal with ownership of cars, where they need to park cars, looking after the cars, maintaining the cars. They just want a ride for their marketers. And you're providing that as a leasing service. So rather than pay several thousand dollars to buy cars, what you're telling the company with your arrangement is that they will pay far less every month for the service. But guess what? If you had sold the cars to them, you may have made a margin of 5% or so. But with this leasing contract, you've just opened an opportunity for your business to make money over the next 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, or who even knows, for a long time. How come? Because you were focused on solutions-based selling. You paid attention to why they are buying, and you paid attention to what they are trying to achieve. Another example might be, rather than sell computers to a big company is making, has some purchase order, and they are saying they want to buy computers. If you find out why they want to buy the computers and what they are trying to achieve, you may just find out that there's an opportunity for you to implement an enterprise management system for the company. Because they may be thinking that having computers is the solution to the problem. But because you are a specialist, you know something that is much better or much bigger than just computers. Because they might just buy the computers and the problem will not be solved. And you know this because that's your industry. That's your line. You are the expert. So you can actually help them save time and save money. And when it comes to saving time and saving money, these things are music to the ears of a big company. Because when you save time and you save money, the big company is more efficient. When a company is more efficient, guess what? They make more money. So they love the language of help me save time, help me save money. The moment you start to talk in that language, they start to roll over for you, right? And that's because you are thinking in terms of solutions, not just, well, okay, they say they want to buy computers and you just show up there and sell computers to them. All you've done is you've only supplied a solution that they think they want. But because you're the expert, you know that that may not really be the solution. So you need to pay attention, right? Another example I've seen is a company says they want to do some sales training for their employees. And what they're asking you to come do is a sales training. But when you find out, why are you training your guys in sales? What are you trying to achieve? And they will tell you that they have a poorly performing sales function. They are not, a lot of potential orders are slipping through the cracks. There's growing customer dissatisfaction. You listen to all the reasons why they are saying all these things. And because you are the expert, you know that this one seminar or this one training will not be the solution to the problem. The solution to this problem may actually be a one-year capacity development program. That is the real solution that these guys need. But guess what? You will make 10 times more money if you sell a capacity development program. After you finish that training program they called you for, you will make 10 times more money than if you were just only focused on the training. So when it comes to big companies, they have the money. They want efficiency. They want to better run their businesses. They need solutions. They think they need products or services. But what they actually want is a solution. They have a problem they are trying to solve. And when they ask you, when they are trying to buy something, they think that that thing they want to buy is the solution to the problem that they have. But that creates an opening for you because you are much more knowledgeable, or you may be much more knowledgeable in that area. So always think solutions when you're dealing with a big company. The fourth tip I want to share is that you need to understand the two routes for penetrating big companies. Now, this is going to be very interesting. So I need you to inch closer to the device you're using to listen to this episode. Right? When you want to penetrate a big company, there are two routes. I've already talked a bit about the first route, which is formal requirements. No matter how close you are to the owner of a big business, no matter how closely related or whatever, these guys are out to make profits. The only language they understand is efficiency, profit, value. They don't care where you are, what color you have on your skin, what language you speak, as long as you are competent and you can deliver the goods. So these guys have formal requirements. So one route into a big company is requirements. You need to be able to meet their registration requirements. So are you a registered company? Do you pay taxes? You know, all those things. Do you have insurance? Do you know all those things they're asking you for? You need to be able to clear that hurdle. You need to go through their procurement process. Big companies work based on process. So you need to walk through that process. If you don't walk through that process, you may have trouble selling. So it's very important that you meet the requirements. You need to understand their technical requirements. If they want to do business with somebody, they are usually technical requirements. What they want or what they expect the product to be able to do. You need to understand the technical requirements. You also need to understand the financial requirements. Are they going to pay you upfront? Are they going to mobilize you? Or are you going to do the job with your money and they pay you back later? All these things are considerations you need to put in place and meet the formal requirements first. I've had situations where somebody, some vendor, right, he came across the head of procurement for this big company he's been trying to reach out to. And they met at some conference and they took a liking to each other. And when the guy told him, you know, my company does this and this and that, and we can actually supply you guys. The very first question the guy said is, do you have your registration? Do you have this? He asked them all those questions. And the guy didn't have some of them. And what he told him was, you know, go and sort those things out. When you sort them out, you can come and let's talk. Right? So it doesn't matter the level of friendship. You need to check all their formal, all the formalities, all the requirements that they have before you can do business with a big company. Why? Because there are consequences. These big companies have auditors, both internal auditors and external auditors. The guy you're talking to has a manager. He has a job to maintain. They have processes. They have structure, all those things. So no matter how much they like you on an informal level or a social level, if you do not meet their formal requirements, it's going to be difficult for a big company to do business with you. So the very first step is meet the requirements. The next interesting step is informal relationships. Because guess what? Big companies may be big, they may make a lot of money, they may have a lot of assets and stuff like that, they may have a solid brand. But interesting thing about big companies, as it is with any company, is that they are run by human beings. And human beings are social creatures. It's very likely somebody in there is a friend of a friend, somebody you went to school with, a cousin of one of your ex-colleagues, a family friend, something. Informal relationships still rule the world, especially when it comes to business. Who you know is important. So it's not just enough to meet the formal requirements. Although I must say this, there are companies where you can actually do business with them without knowing anybody in there. They just ask, they call for proposals, you put in your proposal, they assess it, and then they invite you. And you get the job, you get the contract, you get the project without knowing anybody. I accept that happens. But that's not what happens 100% of the time. Most times you have to prospect. You have to use your network. You have to find out who do you know in there. And all these things matter. So if I give you a couple of tips, for example, if you go on LinkedIn and find out, is there anybody in that company that is remotely connected to you? You know, LinkedIn has all these things about first degree and second degree and third degree and all that. So you find out, who do you know that knows somebody in there? And that could be a first step to penetrating the company. You can look at your social circle. You can explore networking at industry events. So every company, every big company belongs to an industry. And when you have major events, they always want to show up and stuff like that. That is an opportunity for you to meet important people in there. Somebody in HR, somebody in supply chain, somebody in procurement, somebody in production, manufacturing, you know, all those things. So these are opportunities that you can explore. I've also noticed that one interesting but hardly talked about opportunity for networking is education programs, executive education programs. And what I mean is managers at big companies usually go for training programs, executive MBA, you know, all these things. So that's a very interesting place where you can actually catch them, because it's likely some of these programs you attend it. It's very likely you meet somebody in there who is a manager or supervisor somewhere or who knows somebody. So these are opportunities that you can explore. And quickly, let me talk about the fifth tip I want to share with you, which is you need to master the art of perception management. And this is very interesting. Master the art of perception management, because big companies will size you up. Remember what I said. These companies have a reputation to protect. They play in a certain rarefied level of the industry. So they are going to check you out. Are you up to the standard to play within this league? I think that's the question to ask. Are you up to scratch? So they're going to check you out. One common way to check you out is they may ask for references. Okay, so you say you want to do this, you want to supply this product, or you want to provide this service. What's your track record? Have you done this before? Who have you done it for? What have you done? Who have you worked for? That's one common way. They want to check you out. And they will call the references. Why? Remember what I said about risk. Big companies are conscious about risk. They don't want to make mistakes because mistakes for a big company can be expensive. That runs into thousands and millions of dollars, right? So they're going to be sure they know who they're about to bring on board. So they will check you out. One other way they may do it is depending. I noticed that in Africa, one common question is, do you have an office? Where is your office? Right? Even though I think that question is going to gradually become redundant. But the truth is, it depends on the kind of big company you're talking to. Many big companies are traditional in their thinking. And by traditional, I mean, they expect that you have an office that they can come to that is befitting. This whole idea of working from home and all that, except you're like in a tech-based industry or you do the kind of thing that I do, right? But then if you are going to supply a manufacturing concern or a company that deals in hard goods, one question is, where are you? If something goes wrong, where can I find you? Where's your registered office? And they may actually pay you an unsolicited visit, depending on the size of the order, depending on the size of what they want to buy. They might actually, you know, where is this guy? Does he have the facilities? Can he handle this job? Can he do this project? They might come check you out. These days, it's becoming increasingly important that they check you out on the internet. They might likely visit your website because these days, your website is like your digital, your virtual store. They will come and read up about your company. What's this company about? What's your mission? What are your core values? What have you done? So your website will be an important place to stop. They might want to check out the profiles of the key people in the company. They might look at your LinkedIn profile, very likely your LinkedIn profile, and see, okay, what experience, what expertise, what skills does this person have? So these are very little things you can do to tighten up your perception, right? So these are things that you can't afford to play with because when it comes to a company that a big organization will do business with, they might want to know who are the leaders of this company, who is the CEO, who runs this company, what's the team about, what's their experience, are they capable, are they competent, are they credible? So these are things you need to look out for. And that's what I mean by perception management. Because when it comes for a big company, perception, very, very important. How people perceive them, their reputation is very important to them. So if, for example, you are the kind of person who maybe you're an internet troll or you have some very messy, scandalous stuff on the internet and they Google your company or they Google you or something and they don't like what they see, guess what? You're never going to do business with them. So these guys are very particular about perception. So at this point in the episode, let me recap. I started this episode by talking about big companies and why they can be a very lucrative customer segment compared to individual consumers. There's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of money to be made from serving big companies. And then I talked about the upsides and the downsides of doing business with a big company or a big organization, essentially B2B sales. And then I talked about 5 tips for succeeding with B2B sales. The first tip I talked about is that you know who the user is and who the decision maker is, because it's very important. Without these 2 influencers, it will be difficult to properly serve a big company. The second tip I talked about is to know the buying patterns and the buying behavior of a big company. The third thing I talked about is to focus on solution-based sales rather than just selling your standard product or service, because you need to understand why the company is buying and what they are trying to achieve. If you can answer these 2 questions, you can end up selling much more than the company wanted to buy, and they will pay because they have the money. You just need to provide a solution that can help them save money, make more money, be more efficient in their business operations, provide value that can enhance their reputation financially, market-wise, reputation-wise, and all that, right? And then the 4th tip I talked about is to understand the 2 routes for penetrating big companies. The first route is you need to meet their formal requirements. You need to go through their process. And then the second route is to explore informal relationships. Who do you know directly or who do you know indirectly that can give you information from the inside and help you navigate the sales process so that you can finally start doing business with the company. And then the fifth tip I talked about is you need to master the art of perception management. When it comes to big companies, they are going to size you up. So you need to make sure that you look the part, essentially. That's what it is. You need to make sure that you look the part, that they can comfortably do business with you. So at this point in the episode, let me talk about our partners, Quezza. Quezza is a platform that helps and enables small and mid-sized businesses on the African continent to expand their access to market. So if you sell produce or you sell products that are limited by your particular geography, Quezza allows you to be able to sell to customers in foreign markets, in the US market, Canadian markets, in the European market, in the Middle East, right? So to check out Quezza, head over to the Play Store or the App Store. There are two apps. If you sell products, if you're a merchant, download the Quezza Seller app. If you want to check out the range of products on Quezza, download the Quezza User app. Now, there are four things I want you to also consider at this point in the podcast. The first is to join the Insiders Community. The Insiders Community is where we discuss and overcome business problems. So these are the entrepreneurs who work directly with me. They are building businesses in several different industries. They're in 20 plus countries within and outside Africa. And it's an important thing that you have access to advice when you need it. You have access to a community of entrepreneurs who are ambitious and building the businesses of their dreams. You can learn from their experiences. You can network and do other interesting stuff. So to learn more about the Insiders, you can check us out at smallstarter.com/insiders. Again, it's smallstarter.com/insiders. The second thing I want you to do is to tell your friends about this podcast. The valuable information you got in this episode is free of charge. I'm not asking you for anything, right? If there's anything I'm going to ask you for, it is that you tell your friends about the Small Starter Business Podcast. They are going to really thank you because we have a backlog of episodes that explores interesting subjects from how to raise money for a business to how to actually start a business, how to hire good people, sales strategy, how to attract customers, and several different interesting topics. So just tell them the Small Starter Business Podcast. They Google the Small Starter Business Podcast. We're right there at number one in Google, and they're really going to thank you for it. And if you've been listening to the podcast for some time, one good way to give us a pat on the back is to give us a 5-star review. Particularly on Apple Podcasts or whatever app you're using to listen to this podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review and let me know what you enjoy or what you like about the podcast. Another way to leave us a review is to head over to smallstarter.com/review. And you can also follow me on social media. My YouTube channel, John Paul Iwoha. You can search for John Paul Iwoha. I'm also pretty active on LinkedIn. I'm also John Paul Iwoha there. And until the very next episode, I'm hoping to explore interesting conversations around how you can expand sales, how you can build a bigger and better and more interesting business. So until the very next episode, don't be shy or afraid to try new things. A big company might look intimidating from the outside, but like I told you, they have problems. And if you know you have a product or a service that can help them be better at what they do, help them save money, help them create more value, help them make money, a big company wants to listen to you. And guess what? Most of the suppliers that work for big companies started as small businesses. All you really need is to be bold and take that chance. Don't just write yourself off and say, I'm too small to work for a big company. Don't be intimidated. You have to go with your guts. You have to challenge your comfort zone. Your comfort zone might be that you're selling to individual consumers right now and you're wondering why your business is not growing. The moment you land one big company as a customer, it might change everything for your business. The kind of money they pay is different. The way they do business is different. And when you do a big company, you might never want to go back to, depending on what you sell, you might never want to go back to selling to individual consumers. So let that be a challenge that you put on for yourself, that in the next 6 months, in the next 1 year, I'm going to target a big company and see if I can successfully do business with them. It may not work the first time. They might tell you to go back and get this registration or this paper and just take out the time and do those things. The moment you get into their system and you do, you fulfill your first order, you complete your first project, it's very likely going to be a long-term relationship and you're going to keep doing business with them. So until the very next episode, take care of yourself. Be safe. Cheers. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. To take our free business courses or join one of our signature programs for special entrepreneurs like you, head over to smallstarter.com to join our private community. See you inside.